Hello, listeners of the Mad Scientist Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Cogswell, here today with a special guest, one of our longest fans, and now someone who's working on a podcast of their own, Jennifer Taylor, here to talk about the Vanished Amelia Earhart podcast. Jen, how's it going?
Hey, I'm doing great. How's it going with you?
Oh, it's going so great. You know, spring has sprung here in Minnesota.
I hate spring.
Why? Spring is so
spring
good.
Spring is the worst. It's allergies for days.
I also have terrible allergies. So, but at the same time, I'm like today I finished work. I was out on my porch. I had a nice book with me. Had on a hat, you know, sunglasses, whatever. Nice drink next to me, whatever. And my eyes were red. I was, you know, coughing and sneezing, and I was like, this is the best.
So imagine all of those things without the allergies, and you have summer.
Oh, that's true.
That's summer's great.
But summer's so hot, though.
Where do you live? I'm in Texas. Come down here.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay, good point, good point. All right, enough weather. Enough weather jibber-jabber. Today, we want to have you come on the show to talk about Vanished Amelia Earhart, which you are working on with Chris. And Chris, what's Chris's last name again?
Chris Williamson.
Chris Williamson. I wanted to say Chris Williamson, and then I was going to say Chris Evans, and I was like, that's not right.
That is Captain America.
Yes, that is Captain America. Well, you know, I mean, I don't think he'll be mad that I make that association in my mind.
No, not at all. That's actually, no. I think that's the name of his company, Chris Evans Films. Oh, yeah,
that's true.
That's why you got it confused.
Yes, that is true. Yeah. That is, you know what, set me up for failure right now. That's terrible stuff, man. All right. Yes. So
you can call him Chris Evans. I'm sure that he'd be happy.
Oh, I'm sure he'd be very pleased. So tell the listeners a little bit about the show.
Okay, so Chris Williamson, he's the project director for Chasing Earhart. He's been doing that for a couple of years now. That show is, if anyone out there has listened to it, it's really great. It's mostly just interviews. He sits down with various people and, you know, they talk about Amelia. Some of them are legacy episodes. Some of them are on the different theories of her disappearance. Well, Chris then had this idea of trying to take all of that stuff and condense it into a more limited series. So Vanished is a 16-episode podcast, and so far, I believe 10 episodes have been released, and it just kind of condenses everything. The first 7 episodes are about her life, her legacy. It starts at, you know, her birth in Atchison, Kansas, and it follows her life all the way up until she takes off on her world flight. And then it kind of switches gears a little bit, which is where I come in. I step in as a co-host on episode 8, and we start to do this really cool idea he had where he takes all of the different theories about how she disappeared and he puts them on trial. And so we're doing a little mock trial, and we're taking all of the experts that have something to say and who have, you know, the scientific knowledge necessary to, you know, try and figure out where she, you know, could have landed, or, you know, is it possible that she would have maybe ended up on this island or that island? And we have them all on, and they're on the stand, and it's just like a trial, and it's really fun. It's been a lot of fun. No one's ever done this before, as far as I know. So it's been pretty cool.
Yeah. So actually it's an interesting thing, because for those that don't know, you are actually a criminal defense attorney.
Yes.
So when you say they're on trial, they're like actually...
Oh, I'm putting them on trial. Not, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you're going hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't say that.
No, I mean, okay. It's still, listen, it's not like an interrogation or anything, but it is, I think, it is a really cool concept. And one, like you said, I have not seen really before. You know, I think the closest that I've seen to it is... I can't remember the guy's YouTube channel. There's a YouTube channel where it's a lawyer who he evaluates the legal merits of different TV shows.
Oh, wow.
And so my favorite are the episodes that he does on It's Always Sunny, you know, where he's like, this doesn't work. You know, there is no such thing as bird law. You're just, you know, like there have been times where I'm sitting at the airport watching this and I'm like, what is going on? I can't believe a real lawyer took his time to do this, you know, but
just in case anyone didn't know, there is no such thing as bird law.
Right. It's sort of hilarious. But again, you know, I guess I am kind of a scientist talking about Bigfoot and stuff. So who am I to judge?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have tried my hardest to take real legal concepts and apply them to this case. And I have tried really hard to help Chris actually replicate as close as possible what this would actually look like if this were put on trial today. Of course, there's no way to get it perfect. It's a podcast. I can't subpoena people, for example. If so, somebody doesn't want to participate, then that's it. We just have to kind of go forward without them. So
mock subpoena.
I would love to subpoena some of these people, but that's maybe a little too much. So
right, a little intense. That's so
true, yeah. But otherwise, yeah, I really am trying to, you know, explain like what the rules of evidence are, what you can and can't say, what, you know, how this would work in real life.
So, yeah, and you know, and that's actually, I think, probably so. I think one of the most interesting ways of looking at this case, really, because, you know, there have been a lot of, and I think really you guys, you know, the Chasing Earhart, and then, of course, the work that was happening with Astonishing Legends on that too, with that episode, you know, that whole series and everything, and then now Vanished. You know, there's a lot of really great content out there in the Amelia Earhart space, I guess I would say.
Yes.
It's a story that's been really interesting and it's been fascinating for people for a very long time. But I think the angle that makes it, I mean, first off, just the depth of research and the knowledge that not only does Chris bring to the topic, but also now that you're bringing is, I think, pretty astounding. It's sort of, you know, I mean, me and Marie just did a deep dive on the Unabomber and you guys are putting us to shame. You know, we're like, we read a whole book and you guys are, you know, you're digging into documents and everything else and really, really thinking hard about this stuff. Why do you think it is that this story is so seemingly timeless?
I mean, I think part of it is the mystery. People are drawn to a mysterious disappearance, and I think that's part of it. But I think another part of it is just who she was. I mean, earlier you and I were talking about women in STEM. I mean, she was a pilot before women were in the workforce. And so she really was ahead of her time. She was incredibly famous when she disappeared. She was probably on the level of Lindbergh and you know, Babe Ruth and all the other figures from that time period. And she disappeared in a really public way. And so I think that's just a combination of those things.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, the public loves a tragedy.
Yes.
Right. And yeah. So I think that it definitely makes her story very compelling. I also think, like you're saying, with the whole idea of it being, you know, she really was revolutionary for her time period in a way that few people have the opportunity to be revolutionary in the way that she was, where it's really the first, you know, she is breaking all kinds of norms by just being who she was. And so it ends up, I think, making for a really interesting story. And then to have it end so tragically and without an answer,
right,
it really makes it a great story. So yeah. one thing we've talked about a little bit before, and I think it's a point that's really interesting, actually, we talk about it on the show all the time, is, so we often will bring up this thought experiment of, you know, imagine that we find a Bigfoot body. Or imagine we find an alien or a UFO or something. You know, what are the chances that the field of research, quote unquote, that's built up around this topic will be settled? You know, what's the chances if, you know, if aliens come down and say, you know, hey, we're here, we look like this, we're the only ones out there that we've ever found, crazy that you guys are sentient too. What are the chances that, you know, the folks on Ancient Aliens or, you know, people that believe in blue avians or reptiles or any of that other kind of junk, what are the chances that they're going to be like, oh, we were wrong, you guys are right? You know, I think there's a better chance that, you know, the kind of the joke that we go back to is, if the government came out and said that aliens exist, there would be half of the UFO field that would say, this is just a deception by the government that aliens don't really exist. You know, they just want a conspiracy to latch on to. Do you think that this is a field, you know, I mean, this is a subject where there's so many theories and things, and, you know, kind of, I think it's probably, if you want to know more about the theories, listeners, go listen to the show, because it's really good. But do you think that this is a field where things will ever be settled in that way. Like, if they find a plane, you know, forget a body even. If they just find a plane that they can definitively say, this is Amelia's plane, do you think it'll end the speculation, or do you think the speculation will just kind of scatter? It'll just change form?
I think that the speculation will scatter. I think you're 100% right. I think that, first of all, there's going to be a huge group of people. There's a lot of people out there that will never believe that the plane has been found until they see a serial number. And even then, there will be people that say that it's fake. I personally believe that. I think that there are people out there that are 100% reasonable and would be 100% willing to say, oh, okay, I was wrong. I do think those people exist, but by and large, I do not think that that's what we see today in this field. I think it's been so long, and people have invested so much of their time and sometimes so much of their money that I don't think that some of these people would ever be able to bring themselves to say, no, I wasted all of that time, you know? And the lore surrounding her is so widespread now that even if you find the plane and we can all 100%, like, it would be completely unreasonable to disagree that that is her plane and it is in, you know, a certain location, there's still going to be the stories. People are still going to find, oh, the Japanese put that there, you know? I mean, there's always going to be those people. And I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with that. I know others disagree, but yeah, I don't think that the mystery is ever going to be solved.
Hmm. You know, and that's, I think, actually one of the most frustrating things for people with these sorts of topics. And I know it's true for me, too. You know, I mean, I think about that stupid hole on Oak Island. You know, these people
They've destroyed that hole so much. If there's anything down there, they're not going to find it now.
Oh, my goodness. It's like, it's ridiculous. You know, it's the world's most explored hole. Full of nothing.
Wow, Chris.
Yeah. I don't get, I guess, with those things, right? So if they do find the plane, if they do find, you know, a serial number, anything else like that, whatever, I guess kind of what I'm, because I agree with you. I don't think either. And I think kind of my question sort of alluded to that I don't really think that's the way it'll go. I don't think that anyone will ever, say, oh, we were wrong. You know, I think just like with the UFO thing or the UFO topic, I think once a single mystery is solved, it's kind of like a Hydra, you know, another 7 smaller, dumber theories come out. You know, I guess like the Hydra's head's getting, or the brain getting shrunk every time it gets chopped in half or something. I don't know where that illusion is going to, but you know what I mean, right? Yeah. Like, you know, the government has a UFO and then it gets chopped in half and it becomes, no, we were the UFOs all along, or, you know, whatever. But that's another point, though, that I think is kind of interesting, because in some ways, the Amelia Earhart story, because it deals with a physical person that, you know, no one doubts that Amelia Earhart existed in the first place, right?
Yeah, of course.
Everyone, I mean, at least not anyone that you guys are seriously giving consideration to, right?
Because I would 100% guarantee you there is someone out there that would say something like that.
Oh, there's definitely a blog spot out there that's, you know, there's definitely a podcast on that we are just, you know, we are just pissing off right now. But I think because it is a historical mystery as opposed to, say, one of these more esoteric quote-unquote mysteries.
Yeah.
I think that people take it a little bit more seriously, and because of that, I think we assume that the kind of rules that we see are true in these other fields, like that the mystery never gets solved, it just changes form, like that, you know, it all kind of comes down to a deeper misunderstanding or a deeper distrust in our society, as opposed to anything specific about this case. I think the Amelia Earhart story has really managed to stay out of that. But I wonder, once a definitive answer is put forward, or one that is accepted by, let's say, the public, if not the community at large, I wonder if the theories aren't going to get more wacky. Do you know what I mean? Just like it's happened in other fields.
I mean, I think that sounds reasonable to me, because at some point, whenever I say no one can reasonably dispute something, that of course does not mean that the unreasonable
right.
doesn't account for that.
Right. The action word there, reasonable is up for debate a little bit. Right.
Yeah. So
yeah, that's the challenge there, right? With all these things. Another question. Do you think it'll get solved in our lifetimes? Do you think that this is a mystery that will be solved?
I do, actually. I'm pretty hopeful about that. And I say that because the people that I've interacted with so far that are really involved in this case and have really dedicated a significant portion of their lives to it, and the people that Chris has interacted with, these are not just armchair researchers putting out blogs and articles. These are people that are, like I said before, they're investing time and money to going out to Buka, going out to Gardner Island, trying to track down, people go into the archives and they're tracking down documents. And people are really putting a lot of legwork into gather as much data and evidence as we can. I think that Amelia Earhart's plane is close to, I compare it to the Titanic all the time. Once you find it, that's a huge milestone. And I think it is entirely possible to find it. So yeah, I think that with the enthusiasm that we're still seeing today, even after all of this time, I think it's very possible that somebody in our lifetimes will find it.
You know, it's actually really interesting. I've never heard the comparison made to the Titanic before. But really, when you think about it, right, what's the difference really in size between a cruise liner versus an airplane when you're thinking about the entire size of the ocean?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Really, it's like looking for, I'm looking for a grain of rice versus a grain of sand, right? Like, it's still super small. It's still going to be hard to find, I guess kind of the scale, I think, is really an interesting question.
Yeah, so I don't think the Titanic was as far down as they think the plane is. Or at least, of course, it depends on who you talk to. So, for example, if you're talking to the Crash and Sink people, they think the plane is 18,000 feet down, hence the title of Sink. The most recent. 18,000 feet.
I see what you guys did. Okay, nice.
I don't think the Titanic was that far down. I could be wrong, but I think that was a big deal. Also, we know exactly where the Titanic went down because they were sending out SOSs. The Carpathia had seen them. It wasn't really in dispute. I mean, they knew about where she was with Earhart. Even those that subscribe to Crash and Sink, they'll even tell you, well, we have a window. We don't know. There's people that, they think that they know and they won't tell you because they're, they want to go out and look. And so they're not going to give away their secrets. But there's a window of places you can look and you can't get much more specific than that.
Right. No. And obviously that makes total sense. You think this is a situation though, where it's just like with the Titanic, let's say, where we thought it was someplace, but the technology to actually dive down there was still limited. Right?
Yeah.
You think that this is a similar situation, essentially, where, we have to find the thing first, obviously, but with better technology, with better kind of, confined space engineering and things, you think that essentially it's just a matter of getting down there and looking.
I do, being able to get down deep enough to see it. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. That's really interesting. So what, and again, we would be, I would not be doing a good job, I wouldn't think, if I didn't ask you some legal questions surrounding this case.
Sure.
So one that I really am interested in, and we've talked about this previously a little bit, but actually I had a follow-up, I guess, or another thought on this that I had to ask you. So first off, where are these people getting the money to do these searches? Because when you think about the Titanic, right, it was James Cameron using his own money and then, trying to make a movie, right? Mm-hmm. Where is the funding coming from for these searches? And is that a limit? How much limitation is that putting on the search, I guess?
Yeah. So as far as specifics as far as like this group got their money from this place and this group got
right.
Like, well, I don't know a whole lot, but I do know that a lot of it comes from some of it does come from donations. I know that Tiger, I think, for example, they've relied on donations. You can become a member of Tiger and you can, you know, pay you like dues and stuff, and they raise money that way. I know that I think that for the vast majority of the Buka people's funding has just been Bill Snavely either paying for it or raising the money. I know he had a GoFundMe for a little while. Mm. Yeah, Nauticos is another company that went out looking. I don't know off the top of my head where they got their funding.
Okay, but essentially though, it's private donations. Mm-hmm. It is not like, you know, I don't know, National Geographic is paying for a search or, you know, and I wonder though if that's not the way, you know, we often in any kind of research field, regardless of how, you know, close to traditional science or, you know, academia it is, the question of funding is always a huge one.
Yeah.
And so on top of that though, too, is the question of, well, who owns the fruits of that research? So if they do find the plane, who owns the plane? What happens to it?
Yeah, and that is just, that's not something that I know how to answer. It's a question I've thought about a lot. And it's something that Chris and I have discussed a lot, and I just don't know if I can tell you. Whatever I tell you is probably going to be wrong, so I'm just not even going to attempt to digest, you know, treasure trove law and property interests. That's not my area.
Hey there. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a fascinating question because, you know, again, it's that same old one, right? You find something in the woods, you find something in the ocean, you find something weird, whatever. You think it solves a mystery. Well, what happens to it then? And a lot of the times that stuff gets lost. You know what I mean? It gets put away or it gets sold or whatever. And then suddenly, you know, a mystery builds on top of that initial mystery. It's kind of such an interesting thing. Have there ever been any cases during the history of this stuff where, what's the word? Where I guess fakes have been passed on? Has, you know what I mean? Like, I would think just like with, yeah, like I would think just like with, say, mummies or with any of these other kind of, you know, historical-ish mysteries, or even with the Titanic, let's say, that there would be people selling, you know, oh, this is a fuselage from the plane, or this is a yada yada, right? A panel or something.
So I've never heard of anyone trying to get away with selling artifacts. I do know that, so one of the theories relies heavily on what they call the post-lost signals. And so essentially the idea is after she was no longer communicating with the Itasca off the coast of Howland Island, mm-hmm. later people thought that they heard her for the next 6 or so days giving out distress signals. And if that had happened, her plane should have been on land because she wouldn't have been able to use her radio if the plane was in the water. Now, we can argue all day about whether all of the post-loss signals were hoaxes or not, but some of them absolutely were. So, I mean, people will take advantage of a tragedy, and just because trolls have existed since the beginning of humanity. And that's what happened in the 1930s after she disappeared, is there are absolutely cases of people getting on their ham radio and pretending to be Amelia and Fred, which is sad. It's disgusting and terrible, but it happened. And because a few people did it, now we have to have this conversation about the rest of them. You know, now we have to sort through them and figure out, well, what can we trust and what can't we?
It makes me, you know, it makes me think that, and again, I have said this on the show a couple times. I've even said it on some other shows. I had a show where a guy, I do a radio show once every month where it's me, another kind of, another guy who's quite skeptical of these kinds of topics. And then this guy, Dave Scott, who does the actual show itself, Spaced Out Radio. And we had a question that he gave us, which was, you know, well, do you believe in mediums? And I said, of course I don't, you know, obviously, for obvious reasons. But I said, you know, my wife and I have a secret code word that we have actually, we kind of like Houdini and his wife, right? We stole the idea from them. We have if one of us comes back as a ghost, we have a specific word to reference that'll tell us that it's actually them.
That's amazing. We've never told anybody.
We've never told anybody what the word is. But if a psychic ever comes to me and tells me the word, I'm going to be blown away. You know what I mean? I'll be like, oh my God, you're coming with the lotto office. You know, we're going horse betting. I wonder, do pilots have anything like that where, or I guess, so that's, I would wonder if there wasn't like a telltale sign from Amelia, you know, I don't know, bananas, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It seems so interesting that there wouldn't be, cause she was famous, but it's not like fame today where, you know, you're on TV constantly and people can always look you up on YouTube and everything about your life is well known. I would have thought, or I would think, that there are some telltale signs or clues that help differentiate a real distress signal from her or a co-pilot versus like a fake one. You know what I mean? Like if I was trying to make one up, I don't even know where I would start.
Yeah. You know? So from my understanding, she was transmitting from two frequencies. She had a daytime frequency and a nighttime frequency. So that's going to take out anything that's not transmitting on those frequencies right off the bat, because if it's not on one of those two, it cannot possibly be her. There are, and I'm trying to learn as much as I can about the post-loss signals, but I'm still a little, like, I'm still getting lost a little bit.
I understand, yeah.
My understanding is that not only would it have been impossible for her to transmit on any other signal, but my understanding is that it was also illegal for anyone else to transmit on their signals. And I don't know, I don't know the logistics behind something, how something like that would have been set up, but my understanding from reading the research and the papers put out by Tiger was that she had her designated frequencies and no one else was supposed to be using them.
Well, it also seems weird that I guess implicit in that assumption is that they must have what those frequencies were must have been well known, right? Like, did the public know about those frequencies? If there are faked ones, I would think that means the public, unless a couple of, like you said, a couple trolls got like super lucky, you know?
Yeah. I don't know to what extent the public knew.
Interesting. Exactly. Okay. Well,
that's a question anyways, for Chris.
I'll have to listen deep when you get into those signals, because it's very fascinating, I think. So if you had to, I guess, if you had a, you know, I don't know, $100,000 to spend.
Okay. I like where this is going.
Okay. Now, not like, don't spend it on like,
I can't pay off my student loans. Can't,
no, okay, no, right. Not at all. No. Of course not. Are you kidding me? Not until I do. If I had $100,000 to give out, I would be spending it on my student loans. if you had
this conversation kind of money, just right? Got depressing.
Oh my goodness. I'm telling you. Yeah. Gotta love the economy. All right. $100,000 to set up your own kind of investigation.
Okay.
What theory do you think? Okay, I have two ways of asking this, I guess. The first one would be, where would you go look? That's question one. Where would you go look? So that's question one. Go ahead. I want to ask question two because I don't want to get confusing.
So you're essentially asking me where I think the plane is, because I wouldn't risk $100,000 if I wasn't.
I mean, I'm kind of asking you where the plane is, I guess. So, okay, so let me, my second question, or the follow-up, I guess, to that was, what if you had that kind of money to spend on a lesser known theory or a theory that you think is interesting, but maybe doesn't get the kind of mainstream recognition, or an area that you think has been under researched, where would you spend it? So question one is, where do you think the plane is? Mm-hmm. question two is, where do you think it would be interesting to look because you don't think it's getting the kind of, the funding or kind of the research that you think it deserves based on the merits?
Well, I'm not going to tell you where I think the plane is. One is because I haven't developed a concrete idea in my mind yet where I think the plane is. And I'm doing that on purpose. I'm trying to keep an open mind because I want to be fair to everyone that comes on our show. So I'm trying really hard not to develop in my mind an I think it's here and I don't believe anything else type of mindsets. So I don't really know how to answer that question as far as where, I mean, the plane, God, I mean, somebody thinks they already found her plane. Somebody else thinks that they have found pieces of her plane. Those two things cannot possibly both be true. So I would.
Ipso facto. Right. Yeah. Yeah. The two guys that both think they're Jesus. Well, there's no way.
Yeah. And I think that it's not that so many people, it's not that they think that they know where they're going to find the plane. There are people saying, no, we have found it. Somebody says, Bill Snavely says, no, we have found it in Buka. And someone else says, no, we found a piece of it, off the coast of Gardner Island. And that's it. It's, in pieces at the bottom. And then the crash and sink people, they think they know where it is. They just can't get to it. So I don't know if I would necessarily, I don't know if I would necessarily try to invest in trying to locate it as much as I would want to invest in trying to help someone else prove that what they found is the real deal.
Got it. Okay. No, that I think is a super valid, that's something that we always try to say here, right? Is with these kinds of fields or whatever, like the difference between science and a non-science or a good faith effort to investigate versus a non-good faith effort is removing bad theories. If, like you said, these two things cannot possibly be true simultaneously. So one of them is more likely, one of them is less. Spend the money to see which one is more likely.
Yeah.
I think that's a perfectly reasonable place to go for it.
Find something that is disprovable and then work to disprove it.
Exactly. Absolutely. Right. I mean, it's, yes. Good. Oh man, this is great.
Should have been a scientist, man.
I was going to say, I don't know if it's law school or the podcast that's helping you with the scientific
mindset.
Definitely
the podcast. 100%.
Good stuff. I'm very excited.
All you.
I'm very excited to hear that. All right. Let's say, so the episodes are going to go, like you said, would you say 18 episodes?
16, I think.
16 episodes.
Okay, but I 16 think that episodes. Might be up for, like, that's not set in stone.
Okay. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there on the 16 episodes. But right now the plan is 16 episodes.
Correct.
Any plans from you for another mystery after this one?
Yes.
What is it? Can you give us a hint?
I cannot, but I can tell you, that we have decided, where we want to go next. There will be a season two and we've already decided where we want to go with it, but I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Very cool. Okay. Well, I like that. That's a mystery on its own. I want to say too, for the record, I think that you're not telling me where you think the plane is, so I don't go out there and find it myself.
That's it.
Which I'm, I'm a little upset about. I guess the final thing, or one of the big, I guess, overarching questions I've always had on this is, if people besides, and again, I cannot reiterate this enough, listeners, Chasing Earhart and then Vanished are great resources. They are really kind of, if you wanted a definitive take on the subject and the story and where it stands today, this is where I would start. It's one of the reasons that we haven't even tried, we haven't even thought of tackling the story because we're just like, there's so much other great stuff out there on this that, what else could we possibly add to this story? If people wanted to get started in doing this kind of research, or if people wanted to just learn more about the story, besides your shows, where would you suggest people look? What books, you know, documentaries, other shows, like what stuff do you think is really the highest kind of, I guess, or the, you know, the most bang for their informational buck?
Sure. That's kind of a difficult question because no matter where you go, the person that's putting the information out there is, they've got their own kind of idea about what happened. Mm-hmm. And people are not very good at being like, this is my theory. They're going to be like, this is what happened.
She's on this island. She's an old lady. So, right. Yeah. Okay. I get it.
So you got to be careful about that. Tiger's website, and that's T-I-G-H-A-R. Their website has a lot of really good data. They've done a lot of research. They put out a lot of really good articles and blogs, all supporting the Nikumaroro Gardner Island theory. So you can get a ton of information there. Dr. Tom King has written a couple, written like two or three really good books on Gardner Island theory, if that's what you're interested in. If you're interested in Buka, Bill Snavely has a book that I would recommend. That's really good. Okay. I would recommend The Sound of Wings by Mary Lovell. That's a really good book as well. That one was recommended to me by those who subscribe to Crash and Sink. So just keep that in mind. Japanese Capture, Reddit. I mean, I'm being unfair. There's so much information on that one. I would like, people have blogs. That one off the top of my head, I can't give the best book. I might have to get in touch with Chris and maybe I can email you later, but that one, for the most part, I have been on various blogs and forums trying to get information on that one.
Okay. And that, to my understanding, that's a more recent theory too, right? Or it's one that's gotten more prominence recently.
I think that one's been around for a while, because I really think all the way back to the liberation of Saipan. I think I really think that one goes all the way back. It's the Irene Bolam one that came out much more recently. And that one, I can tell you exactly what website to go look at for Irene Bolam, but I want to get it.
And that's the one where for listeners that don't know. So Irene Bolam, she was a basically a random lady that this author said she's Amelia Earhart. And then she sued the pants off.
Yeah, basically. So the guy who has done the most work, I'm not going to say that because I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but there's the best website on that theory is called irene-amelia.com. That's if you want to see all the stuff out there on that theory, that's where you should go for that. That website is run by Swindell is the last name of that guy. Cool. You can find all very that cool stuff kind of conglomerated all right there. Todd Swindell, that's his name.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for coming on here to talk about this with me.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Listeners, again, the show is called Vanished Amelia Earhart. You can also check out Chasing Earhart. Jen, thanks so much for coming on. And anything else you wanted listeners to know? Any other websites or things that they should look out for?
I mean, go subscribe to the Vanished Amelia Earhart podcast. Go check out the Chasing Earhart website. You can get updates there. I guess that's about it.
Great. Okay. Well, thank you so much. And dear listeners, we'll be back soon with our next full episode. Thank you again, dear listeners, for listening to the Mad Scientist Podcast. I have been your host, Chris Cogswell, joined by my co-host,
Marie Mayhew.
If you'd like to contact the show, please send us an email at themadscientistpodcast@gmail.com. That's all one word. You can also follow us on Twitter at madscientistpod or at teamgiantsquid for Marie. And of course, you can see us on Facebook, on Instagram, and all over the internet as the Mad Scientist Podcast. And again, our logo is the one with the pumpkin head, so it's easy to see.
Mm-hmm.
If you've enjoyed the show tonight, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where the money that you give to us will help us to promote this show further, to make it better, and just to spend more time making it.
Because we love doing that.
We do love doing that. Our logo was designed by Carrie Shaheen. Our web design is done by Desdemona Howard.
Woohoo!
And our sound design is done by Jake Cardinal. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you. This has been a Damn It Chippy production.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.